Okay, so we have another mitzvah to consider today, another mitzvah that is discussed in Maseches Chulin and fits with the themes of Maseches Chulin as far as its connection to Shechita and to the consumption of animals and the like. And we'll see that it fits also in terms of a number of broader themes that connect to Maseches Chulin. And here we have another very fascinating opportunity that is similar and different from our previous opportunity. So over the course of the year, talking about Shechita and Basa B'Chalav and the like, so we have explored a little bit how the Lumdus can give expression to various themes within the mitzvah. And talking about Gid HaNasha most recently, so we saw that there was an unusual connection to Tameh HaMitzvos because of the way the Torah conveys the mitzvah in the context of the story of Yaakov. Here, with Shiluach HaKan, we have maybe an opposite relationship, that here, the Tameh HaMitzvos is certainly also very much a topic of discussion, and yet there is a line in the Gemara that scares us off a little bit about focusing too much on the Tameh HaMitzvos here. And that line is relevant not just to this mitzvah, but to the whole endeavor of Tameh HaMitzvos and the whole question of to what extent we're allowed to incorporate that even without paskening halacha l'maisa from it. So there's a lot to figure out about how this sugya works and its impact on a lot of other things, impact on all of Tameh HaMitzvos and interactions, and it's a fascinating sugya. So let's get started. So we know that the Torah tells us in Parshas Ki Tzetze, I read it, God willing, at the end of the summer, that already, that if one should encounter a nest, now the exact definition of a kan or a cane actually is not 100% clear. Could refer to the nest, could refer to the chicks or the eggs together in the aggregate. It could refer to the mother. There's a lot of discussion as to how exactly to translate the language here. But we know that we're referring to something connected to a nest and eggs and the mother. That's clear. So you should not take the eggs without first sending away the mother. So there's a lot to consider about this, as we'll see. But first off, what would you assume is the purpose of this mitzvah, if you're not afraid to assume based on what you may have already seen? So coming from a Tameh HaMitzvah's perspective, why would you think that the Torah commands us to do this? Okay, Gideon?
I'm going to say an unpopular answer because of later, but
Rachamim. Okay, so this is a popular answer, actually, and despite some of what you'll see, it is still the most popular answer, and it's the answer that is advocated by Rishonim, even though there is reason to have pause based on the Gemara and the Mishnah elsewhere, but that is the most popular approach. And so, for example, the Rambam in Mor Nebuchadnezzar takes that stand, that it's Mishum Rachmanus. And the Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, he expands on these themes. And he connects it to Oso V'Espino, which is itself a fascinating discussion, especially because that was one of the mitzvot that we also wanted to try to squeeze in to, we wanted to squeeze into this man. I'm not sure if we'll have as much time as we want, so we can take this opportunity to kind of piggyback and to talk a little bit about Oso V'Espino also. So we know that the Torah prohibits us from shechting an animal and its mother on the same day. And there also, what's the assumption, what's the reasoning behind that mitzvah? So the Ramban here assumes, as do others, and there are definitely a number of Rishonim who link Oso V'Espino and Shiluach HaKan, assume that there is a that there is a relationship here, that they are motivated by a desire to have rachmanis on the animal, or maybe more accurately put, not to express achzarius. Right, that the assumption is, okay, you want to shecht an animal, fine. But to shecht an animal and its mother on the same day, that's an expression of achzarius. And the Ramban mentions here, and the Ramban quotes from the Rambam also in Moreh Nevuchim, but he mentions here that they are linked, that just as we don't want to shecht the mother and the child on the same day, so too, when you take the baby birds, so you don't do it in front of the mother. And it's also interesting because we spoke about Pasuk B'Chalav, which is far less obvious as far as its reasoning, or far less intuitive even as far as its reasoning. And Pasuk B'Chalav, we discussed most out of all the topics that we've spoken about this year. Pasuk B'Chalav is often like the paradigmatic chok. It is a mitzvah that seems most to be outside of our rational understanding. And yet there is still a lot of commentary and suggestion as to what that's about. So there are also some of the Mephorshim connected it to Oso V'Espino also. And the assumption being that the Iker, Isser of Basu B'Chalav, is the way it's phrased. Especially those of you who weren't here when we talked about Basu B'Chalav, just take a minute to expand on that. So Basu B'Chalav, it's always been a topic of a lot of discussion, because yes, it's a chok, it seems like. But also the way the Pasuk conveys it, sometimes it's been the basis of attack on Orthodox practice. Okay, the Torah says, don't boil a kid in its mother's milk. Why does that mean that any combination of meat and milk should be a problem? How do you see that from the Pasuk? So the question certainly does remain, that even though we understand the halachic process, how we come to apply it to all meat and milk, but why does the Torah convey it this way? So out of all the ways the Torah could choose to tell us not to mix meat and milk, why does it convey it this way, not to boil a kid in its mother's milk? And some of the Mephorshim understand that that's actually the Iker Isser, that the reason we're prohibited from mixing meat and milk is because of that scenario specifically, that would convey a certain midah v'achzarius. Right? That even though that's farther removed, it wouldn't be even perceived by even a sensitive animal what's going on, but as far as what it does to us, it conveys a certain level of cruelty. Like, not only are we going to eat this animal, not only are we going to shecht the animal, but when we cook it, we're going to use its mother's milk to cook it, just to show how little we care about it. Okay, this is how little we care about it. So there, the comparison was drawn between that and also the Espino, even though it's far less obvious. And here, in that case, in Basu B'Chalav, so it would mean that, yes, of course, l'halach l'maisa, we're not allowed to mix any meat with any milk, but all of it is because of a core concern of not mixing specifically an animal in its mother's milk. And everything else is kind of a harchaka for that. The Torah prohibits it absolutely, but the reasoning is because of that particular case, and that's conveyed to us by the fact that the Torah uses that language to describe the scenario. And the practicalities are an extension. The fact that it applies to everything is basically a harchaka for everything else. So here, the Ramban mentions this idea also, and again, he's quoting from the Rambam Moreh Nevuchim, but he's adding his own points, that when we say that we want to compare it to Oso V'Espino, so this, that would make then three Yisurim in the Torah that are about not having two generations of animals shechted or involved in Shlita, in consumption, in the same experience. Right, that would essentially make them all in that category. So either we could say it's because we don't want to indulge our achzarius and therefore create achzarius within our personality, or because we are looking out for the feelings of the animal. The mother animal, the assumption being, has a anguish from seeing this happening, that there is a perception on the animal level that their child is being taken to eat or being shechted, And if that's the case, so once again, it's going to be that really the ikar is not to take the child first, because the mother sees the child being taken, and that's where the anguish is. But la halacha, we apply it in both directions. So we say also the espinel, for example, would apply whichever generation is shefted first. You still have the prohibition. But the ikar logic of the prohibition is about shefting the child before the mother. The mother should see the child being shefted. That's what we want to avoid. But in practice, the isser includes a harchaka from that, so it's going to go even beyond that. But that's going to get us into a little bit more controversial territory, as we'll see. There also is a theme which the Ramban talks about, and the Sefer HaChinuch talks about also, that there is a concern not to make a species extinct, that wipe out two generations at once is offensive to the idea of preserving the creation, even though you're not going to single-handedly make the species extinct, but as part of a sensitivity to that, maybe that's also built in here. There is a very nice idea that you can find in the Sefer Zayim L'Mishpat. Zayim L'Mishpat is a Lutzker Rav who has beautiful commentaries on Chumash, his beautiful Svarim overall. And among them, his commentary on Chumash is very much appreciated by Rabbanim, especially because he has some very beautiful Drush ideas. And I remember I once related this idea in Shul to the appreciation of a great scholar who was there, that we know that there is a relationship between Kippur Av'eim and Shiluach HaKan, which itself is worth exploring, because these are both mitzvos that the Torah unusually tells us the schar, right? The Torah doesn't so commonly tell us that there's a schar associated with mitzvos specifically. And here, in the case of Shiluach HaKan and Kippur Av'eim, so they are both held up as mitzvos that will give us a long life. And that's why the Gemara also tells us that Elisha ben Abuya had a traumatic spiritual crisis because he saw a father tell a child, go up to that tree and send away the mother bird, and unfortunately there was an accident, and he died. And he says the Torah is not true if it says that you get a long life. Here he's doing both Kippur Av'eim and Shiluach HaKan at the same time. So how could that be? And we're meant to understand it doesn't necessarily mean long life in this world. It means long life in the next world. But one way or another, the Torah is emphasizing a schar in these two cases, and there is some kind of a linkage between them. So the Lutzker Rav suggested that the point is that there is a message here about parental protection. That the idea of sending away the mother, he suggests it has another moral component to it, that if you are going to take a baby bird, the egg or the chick, if you're going to go for the child, so the maternal instinct is to protect the child and therefore expose themselves to danger, because they're not able to protect themselves. So for you to exploit that in order to take the mother, say, okay, because the mother is protecting her child, now she's vulnerable, and now I'll go after her, that is particularly offensive. That's particularly problematic. And the Torah is saying that for you to take advantage of the instinct for parental protection and to abuse it, that's something that we are particularly opposed to. And that's built into this issue. So that's, or this built into this mitzvah. It's both an asei and a lo asei, which is something itself that we'll have to try to explore. But in any event, that's a very fascinating perspective. So there are many who assume, like I think the Gidon, this is a more popular view actually to assume that Rachmanis is a component or something connected to Rachmanis is a component here, but it's not the only way to see it, as we'll look at in a second. And it's also quoted in the name of the Vilna Gaon that actually we don't really know if this is the impact that it actually has. Maybe it actually has a negative impact for the mother to be sent away while this is happening, and it's not something that she would want, so to speak, in animal terms. And Gaon suggests that that's actually why Kippurah Ve'Eim and Shiluach HaGan are put together, because they're actually opposites, which is a whole different perspective, that they draw on opposite instincts. And therefore, as far as Tzchar is concerned, to assume that you are motivated by God's command as opposed to just your teva is the message here, because you're fulfilling two mitzvos that draw on opposite instincts. And together, that's the assumption maybe that they have to work together, then that shows that there really is a genuine avodas Hashem coming from command rather than from instinct. And in that spirit, he understood also that after Akedat Yitzchak, so the Torah tells us that Avram is told that, okay, now I know that you're a Yirei Hashem, now I know that you fear God, and a question could be asked. So he had 10 tests, he had 10 nisyonos, and he passed all of them. And only after this one that he's known to be an Eved Hashem, he's known to be a Yirei Hashem. 9 tests didn't make the point. So the Gra explains in the same spirit that the Akedah drew on a opposite instinct from all of the other actions that he did. Everything else was more connected to a Midah of Chesed, so, or something at least compatible with that. So therefore, if Avram stood up to all those Nisyonos, so then, okay, it could be that that's just in his Teva, that's just the kind of personality he is. But that he's able to pass the test that draws on the opposite Midah, so that's something that shows that he's really coming from a Yiras Shamayim perspective, from a Avodas Hashem direction, and therefore that's where he's recognized as a Yirei Elokim. So that is an opposite perspective, to see this in a very different way. So that is something certainly worth noting, but it's also perhaps relevant to the line in the Mishnah we find in Maseches Brachos, also in Maseches Megillah, that makes things very complex, that we're told there that a ha'omer al kantipor yakiu rachmecha, that if somebody says in the context of Tefillah that a Kadosh Baruch Hu's rachamin extends to even the bird's nest, so then how do we respond to that? Mishaskin also. They say it's not appropriate. Well, you tell this person to be quiet. And the Gemara Maseches Brachos has 2 interpretations of that. And it's itself interesting because the interpretations are not going in the same direction themselves. But one interpretation the Gemara gives is this is bad to say because you are matil kinna b'maisa b'reishis, that you're going to stir up jealousy among the creations. And the other perspective is that it's making a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvos into rachamim, when in reality they're only gezeros. So what does that mean? Now, what does that tell us about this mitzvah or about any tameha mitzvah? So how would you interpret that in light of what we just saw, that a number of Rishonim seem to take it as a given that there is a component of Rachmanis in this mitzvah, and here Mishnah seems to be telling us, that this is inappropriate to say. And Rashi in Megillah says that, yeah, that we should be accepting a mitzvah as an ol, as a responsibility on us. That is an expression of Rachmanis. So how do you reconcile the two? Or do you reconcile the two? What would you suggest? Gido?
We can acknowledge that there's an element of Rachmanis in the mitzvah while still acknowledging that that's not why we're doing the mitzvah.
Okay, so you're saying that we perform mitzvos because of the tzivoy, if I'm understanding you correctly, but in the chanami, that the tzivoy could have meaning behind it that we can relate to, and the Rachmanis could be the meaning. Okay, that's a possibility. Any other suggestions? Any other thoughts? So, It's interesting that, first of all, the Rambam comments on this in a number of places. So if you want to get the Rambam's perspective on this, look through all his works. So he talks about this in Mor Nebuchim, and he talks about this in the Perish HaMishnayos to Brachos, and he talks about it also in Mishneh Torah in Hilchos Tvila. So in all of these contexts, he gives a number of approaches which are different from each other. And in one case, he simply says that this is a machlokes, that there's different attitudes among chachamim, and this opinion that it's about not making the mitzvot in terachamim, that is something that is working off an opinion that we don't relate to tamei ha-mitzvot, and that's not our whole opinion, that's not how we conclude. So the Rambam, in one of his approaches, just rejects this from practical office. This is not our attitude. Our attitude is that we can and we should focus on this component of the mitzvah. Some understand it as focusing a little bit differently, and maybe it's similar to what Gidon is saying, but could go in different directions also, that yes, the mitzvah has a goal of rachmanis as far as what it's supposed to do for us. But it doesn't mean that the mitzvah is motivated by rachmanis. So there's different ways to formulate this. Some of them are in the Rishonim, some are in the Achronim. That it could mean, for example, that it's about instilling within us rachmanis and preventing achzarius, two sides of the coin. But it's not rachmanis in the sense that we want to spare the bird or spare the animal. Some of the Rishonim, for example, say that we allow shechita. And so we allow the taking of an animal and the killing of an animal for the benefit of human beings. So to say that Kadosh Baruch Hu is trying to preserve the animals, is trying to have rachmanis on the animals, is somewhat a tension. Although it's hard to fully appreciate that question because, as we've been seeing all year, when we started off talking about shechita, so yes, we are allowed to kill animals and use animals, but we're told within that context that we're supposed to do so as mercifully as possible and as painlessly as possible, and many of the Rishonim understood that that was the reason for the mitzvah of shlita, that shlita is understood by most of the Rishonim to be the most painless way of killing an animal, and that that's the context. So could wonder why shechita is being brought up here as the opposite of this. It could be very much consistent with this. But nonetheless, the way they expressed it is the fact that we're allowed to take animals and use them for our own benefit and kill them for our own benefit indicates that it's not that we are being merciful on the animal's existence, that it's more about teaching us not to be cruel and to have the attribute of mercy. So that's one way of understanding this difference, that it's not about rachmanis in the sense that we're trying to spare the animals, it's about rachmanis in terms of our cultivating a sense of mercy within ourselves and avoiding achzarius, which is going to be somewhat at odds with that view that the Ramban was mentioning, that we don't want the animal to feel bad that we kill the child in front of the animal, and that's really what it's all about. But maybe it's not necessarily about how the animal is assumed to be perceiving it as much as it's about the impact it has on us. Like we mentioned before, that if that's the logic behind Losavashul Gedib B'chalei Vimo, so there at that point there's clearly no perception on the animal's part that, you know, the milk is not connected to the mother anymore and the child is not alive anymore. There's no animal perceiving what's going on. But it's about just the attitude that it would instill within the person. There are those also who explain it, that Rav Asher Weiss has an essay about this, an essay for Aron Chumash, and Parshas Kisaitse, that we'll say a little bit more about, that the idea is that to say it's Rachmanis, what the Mishnah is telling us is bad, is that we're saying it's like a Kadosh Baruch Hu just can't do anything different, that he has a mida like human beings have, that, oh, they just can't bear to watch, so they got to do something, that they're controlled by the mida. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu isn't controlled by anything, and therefore, yes, this is Rachmanis, but it's Rachmanis that he is choosing to legislate, that he is choosing to express, and to portray it as if he doesn't have a choice in the matter, because that's his nature. So that's where the problem is. Again, it's a subtle point, but it is instructive, and this is the sense you get also from the way the Rambam brings it in Hilchos Tefillah, and the way some of the other Mefarshim point out that the context in which we're told that we're not supposed to associate this with Rachmanis is in the context of Tefillah specifically. And maybe that's the point, to say, oh God, you can't even hold back your mercy on animals, so you should have, on birds, you should have mercy on us also. That essentially has a certain connotation in that context, that it's a midah that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is controlled by, and we're trying to tap into it, we're trying to play him, so to speak, based on that kind of an approach. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the theme of the mitzvah is not Rachmanis, and the Hanami, the theme is Rachmanis. So what we basically see is a range of perspectives how to relate to this idea, and something that the Sefer Achinuch takes up also. I don't think about the Sefer Achinuch on the Makoros list, but you should take a look at the Sefer Achinuch in Parshas Ki Tzeitzei, because this is a particularly sensitive topic for him, just like for the Rambam, that the Rambam and the Sefer Achinuch, more than others, spent a lot of time and devoted a lot of attention to the field of Tamei HaMitzvos. So this line that seems to question where Tamei HaMitzvos fit in, so it's something that affects their whole life's work. It's something that affects much more than this one mitzvah. So there is a real need to try to explain it and to put it into context. So it's worth, if you have a few moments, to look at the Sefer Achinuch and see how he addresses this phrase. But basically, we see a range of possibilities here, that maybe it's talking not about Rachmanis at all, like the Lagon understood, or like Rashi seems to imply, that we don't have a understanding b'chlal what it's about. Or perhaps more commonly, that it is about Rachmanis, but what does it mean to say it's about Rachmanis? Maybe it means that it's about teaching us Rachmanis, or about ordering us to work on Rachmanis, or it's about Rachmanis in a more general sense, but it's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu's compulsion to act this way that is behind this mitzvah. So this topic is important because it impacts the whole study of Tamei HaMitzvot, but it probably is also going to impact the practice of this mitzvah, at least in one very major way, which we'll start discussing now. But so far, so good? Everybody with me? Okay, so the application of this mitzvah is open to one very basic question. There's a lot of details, and there's a lot of rules, and in the past few years, a number of svarim have come out, several hundred pages or more, about this mitzvah. And there is a very, very fundamental question, which affects everything, or certainly affects our whole relationship, that the poskim struggled with. And it's not super explicit in the Rishonim for the most part, and it's mostly a discussion in the Achronim, but it really goes to the basic fundamentals of this mitzvah and how it's practiced or not practiced today. Anyone have any idea what I'm getting at? A very fundamental question to ask about this mitzvah, what exactly the Torah is telling us and not telling us. Probably being a little vague, so I don't know if anybody has any clue what I'm talking about. So, the basic question, so fundamental, is what exactly, let me take out a chumash, so just to see the context here, Sorry. What pasuk is it again? Here it is, sorry, going the wrong direction. All right, so what does the pasuk say? Chav beis vav ki kare kan sipor lefanecha baderach v'chal eitz ol haaretz afrochem oveitzim v'aim rovetzes al afrochem ol haveitzim lo sikach haaim al habanim shalech kishalach es haaim v'yas habanim sikach loch v'man yitav loch v'harach deyam. So the fundamental question that the post can deal with, and there's a lot written about this, looking at one sefer that has a 100-page essay on this question alone, is what kind of a mitzvah is this? Is this a mitzvah that actually is an obligation? Or is this only conditional? That if you're interested in taking the children, so then you have to send away the mother. But if you're not interested, then fine. Leave it alone. You're not obligated to do this. It's not a mitzvah chiyuvah. Maybe it's comparable to shchita. Right? And that's the impression one might get, that maybe it's like shchita, that if you want to eat the animal, you're obligated to shecht it, or have someone else shecht it, and you're not allowed to eat it without shchita. But if you're not interested in eating the animal, so then don't shecht it. So is that what's going on here? That if you want to take the children, then you have to send away the mother. But if you don't, then don't. So what would you say, based on what you know from anywhere, what would you say about this? How do you relate to this mitzvah? Any thoughts, Ari?
I think we saw some of the Rishonim, or in the Gemara, there was commenting on the word ki kara, which means when you happen upon. If you don't happen upon this animal, then you're in a situation, then you're not missing out, and you're not failing this commandment.
Okay, so we'll see. That's actually a very significant point, that Gemara, and that language, but maybe in a different direction. So I'll explain exactly how that plays a role. You're right that that detail is very important, but not necessarily exactly the way you might think. So let's hold off on that point for a second, but we'll come back to it. What else would you take into account here? See any other indications one way or another? Okay, Ari again.
Also, I think from Gittin, we have a case study when it says, in Gittin, ki kach ishisha, and that obviously isn't obligatory, so you can understand the word ki here also. It's not saying, you know, you shall do this, but rather when such and such circumstances happen. But in Ananias, the circumstances don't arise, you don't need to do it.
Interesting point. I see there, just to clarify, it's also in Parshas Ki Tse, you're saying divorce is obviously not obligatory. So if you're reading the key as going through the whole sentence, that when a person gets married and he doesn't like her anymore, so then that's how to do it. But there the key yikach, the beginning of the sentence, which refers to the marriage, so some of the Rishonim, such as the Rambam and the Sefer Echinuch, understood that that does constitute a chiyuv, that getting married in the first place is a mitzvah. But just then we read to the end of the sentence, and then there's a consequence that, okay, after they got married, it went bad, and then, so there is a mahalach of divorce. So how exactly to fit that in here is a little bit complicated. But yeah, the language definitely is a part of it. Trying to analyze what exactly ki means here is definitely a big part of it. How would this connect or not connect to the Tamei HaMitzvos angle? Do you see any relationship between the reasonings that we've discussed and this question? So we'll have to consider that also. So this topic is a major machlokas in the later Svarim, and it has major implications, especially today. So many people, especially of a more Hasidic orientation, this is more a attitude within the Hasidic world, that there is a positive value in sending away the mother, regardless of your interest in taking the kids or not. And many understand that there's a segula involved, and therefore will seek out opportunities to do this. And we'll invite others to do this, we'll be machabid people with this. So they're working off the premise that this is something that has its own independent value. The Torah is saying to do this, and not that it's only because you might want the children, but some sending away the mother has its own mitzvah value. And many others don't take that approach. So this is something that very much affects practicality. So this was a major discussion in many Achronim, and the one who really is quoted as having kind of started the whole discussion is Chavis Yair Bachrach, who has a tshuva in which he assumes that one is obligated to do this even without an interest in the children. And he comes at this from two perspectives. One, a textual proof, and the other, a Tamei HaMitzvos approach as well. So what is the textual proof? So it has to do with what Ari pointed out before, but maybe this is going in a different direction. So the language is ki kare kansipor lefanecha, when you happen to run into it, and that language is you emphasize the significance. So the Gemara and Amasechta in Chulin on Kuf Lamites in the days that you saw, the Gemara says yachol yachazer baharim uvos kedei shein sakein talmud lomar ki kare v'mayir lefanecha. Right? So you might think that, oh, what I have to do is I have to look around. I have an obligation to try to fulfill this mitzvah. So I got to keep my eyes out and go on a mission to find such nests so that I can fulfill this. So, no, the Torah comes and says, no, that's not your obligation. When you should happen upon it. Should happen upon it. So then, that's what you should do. So what does the Chavis Yair see from that? He sees from there that apparently this is something that you're obligated to do when you do encounter it. Because otherwise, how could you have a Havamina that you would have to look for it? If the din is that even if you encounter it, you're still not obligated to do this. You only do it if you're interested in the children, well, then obviously there's no reason you would have to go looking for it. You don't have to do it even when you encounter it. So what does Havamina come to express? So for that reason, he has a textual objection. Now, how do you relate to that proof? Does that proof win you over? What do you think? What would you say? So here you could address it from a couple of angles. So one is just a general methodological question of how much weight do you put, how much weight do you put in Havamina?
If we have reached your voicemail, another line and follow the instructions to confirm your appointment at the end of this message. For canceling, please call us back at 201-262-1140 during business hours. Please make sure you bring your most current insurance card. Thank you.
Sorry about that, a phone issue there. Sorry about the interruption. So, you could say that we're not sure how much weight to put in a Havamina, that it could be that that's just what you could have thought, and the whole Chiddush of the Pasuk is to say not that way. So when the Pasuk tells us that it's only under these circumstances, maybe that is Davka to show that the Havamina was flawed. So it doesn't necessarily tell us something about what the actual reasoning of the halacha is. Or it could be that it's coming to address something else. Because if you were obligated, so what would the limit of the obligation be? And this is the point that Rav Asher Weiss emphasizes in his essay, that are you obligated to spend all day looking for birds to send them away? You know, what's the shear? How much of a chiyuv would it be? Chazon Ish, who actually assumes that there is no chiyuv, but the Chazon Ish said maybe the possibility was that you should have to do it once in your life, which is an interesting assumption because hard to see where that is necessarily in the pasuk, although you have such a discussion. So, for example, the Rambam understands that there's a chiyuv minatorah of tefillah, based on the idea of you should worship God with all of your hearts, and the Gemara says Avodah Shebelev Tefillah. So the Rambam says you have an obligation in the Torah to daven once a day. So, okay, maybe you understand where he sees an obligation to daven in the Torah, but how do you know it's once a day? So the Kiryas Sefer writes on that if you have an obligation in the Torah and it's expressed without any limit, so then there's only two ways to interpret it. Either you got to do it once in your lifetime or every day. So it doesn't sound logical that you should only have to daven once in your lifetime. So we'll have to do the opposite and assume it means every day. So maybe here, okay, so if there was a chiyuv to do this, how often would you be mechuyuv? Every day? Maybe once in a lifetime. Who knows? So it's very unclear. So that's part of the reason why Rav Asher Weiss writes that it's hard to believe that that was even the Havamina. So maybe the point is, it's to reject it even as a mitzvah kiyumis. That maybe you might say, okay, I'm clearly not obligated to do this. But maybe there's a value in doing it. That maybe every time I send away the mother, there is something I'm accomplishing. And therefore, the Gemara is saying that maybe it's a good idea to travel around the world and look for birds to send away. And to that, Gemara is responding, no, it's not necessarily a good idea. It's only relevant if you should happen to stumble upon it. There isn't any inherent value. Just like there isn't any inherent value in going around looking for animals to shecht if you're not hungry, or in divorcing your wife if you're not interested in, to give your example from before. So too, there isn't any point in going around and searching for birds. It's only in this context. So the application of this proof is itself a subject of a lot of analysis. There's also a Tamei HaMitzvos component to this discussion, that the Chavos Yar adds another reason that we haven't spoken about yet, the language of the Zohar. And the Zohar that he references, there is an additional symbolism there, that the one-line version of it is that this is Ma'orah Rachamei Shamayim, that this is a way of evoking God's compassion, and that the Zohar has a longer discussion about it, that there is angel who's in charge of the birds, and when you start to send away the bird, so the mother bird is now exiled, is flying around with nowhere to go, so the angel who's in charge of the birds expresses advocacy on behalf of Mother Bird. So then the message gets brought to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that here your children are in Galus, and just like the bird is being advocated for, so who's going to advocate for the Jewish people? How can we let them stay in Galus? So essentially that it's Ma'ir Rachmei Shemayim in the context of the people being in Galus. So if that's the case, so then maybe it makes sense to do, even without any interest in the children. It's about sending the mother into exile, so to speak, and through that, evoking divine rachmanis. So the Chavetz Chaim brings that as a additional reason why it should apply even in that context. So there are many who disagree with this. As we mentioned already, Asher Weiss, Cox Badis, and Chazon Ish, and others. But probably most prominently quoted on this slide to object to this is Chaim Sofer. And Chaim Sofer has a tshuva where he rejects this approach. He says this is not something to do if you're not interested in taking the birth and taking the children birth. And he doesn't accept either proof. And he says, as far as the Zohar is concerned, he says, first of all, so you might be wondering, so that's seemingly anachronistic application, because to refer to the Jews in Galus, so is the mitzvah in Chumash. So the mitzvah in Chumash can't assume the Jews are always in Galus. So why should the mitzvah be addressed to a Galus situation? So the truth is, as Rosh Weiss points out, the Zohar itself does discuss that and points out that it has other applications as well, not just the Galus, the Jews from the land of Israel, from the Beit HaMikdash, but Neshamos that are dislocated in general. But in one way or another, so that's one of his objections. And he says that either way, this is coming from Kabbalah, this is coming from Nistar, and the sources in Nigla don't agree with it. So as far as Halacha is concerned, this isn't something that we are going to paskin based on. And then he incorporates the Tamei HaMitzvos in the other direction. That's why also this is such a crucial component. He says the whole point of this mitzvah is rachmanis. And for you to send the mother away from the children without any purpose, just to send it flying around and to separate it from the children, that's itself achzarius. That's itself an act of cruelty. And you're better off just leaving them all alone. So it only makes sense if we assume, says the Chaim Sofer, if we assume that it's about rachmanis, so fine, if you're going to take the children, so it's rachmanis not to do it in front of the mother. But if you're not going to take the children, just to send the mother away and separate it from the children and to send it flying away from its nest, so that's itself achzarius. So he's incorporating the Tamei HaMitzvos into the sack of this very crucial issue, what exactly is the scope of the mitzvah. So there's more to say about this and some of the other details, so we will relate more next time. But just to mention Rosh Weiss's discussion, his position, he's sympathetic to this, both for intuitive reasons and for various proofs, to say that there is no actual mitzvah. One of the proofs that he brings also is that the Gemara in Kiddushin tells us that women are obligated in this mitzvah too, because it's a mitzvah saseh she'ein hazman gramla. There's no specific time involved, so therefore there's no reason to exempt women. So as he notes, you could say, well, women would have been obligated anyway, because there's a lo saseh, there's a prohibition involved. The prohibition of lo sikach eim al abanim, that you're not allowed to not do this. So women are obligated in almost all the prohibitions. So that should be enough reason to say women are obligated. So to that, he says that what you see from here is that the lo saseh is not automatic. It's contingent on a certain situation, that if you want to take the children, so then this is how you have to do it. But if somebody's not interested in taking the children, so then the lo saseh is not going to come in. Is not going to be relevant. So he thought that that's the conclusive proof, and that there are a number of other proofs that also go in that direction. And again, we'll revisit the topic a little bit more, but his conclusion in the Maisa is that because of this whole machlokas, and because of the possibility that there is achzarius involved, like the Chacham Sofer said, so his conclusion is Shev al Taisa Adif, which is interesting, because one might say, okay, it's a machlokas and a Safik Deraisa, so maybe we should be machmir to do it. And, for example, Shmuel Yaakov Fisher, the Eidah Haredes, he took the position that that was the view of most of the Rishonim, the interpreters, and thought that that should be the policy. But here, Avashu is saying differently, he's saying that you're better off not doing it because of the possibility of Achzarius and the like. And he says, it's only if, for whatever reason, you want to send the mother away for a different reason. Let's say it's on your windowsill and it's causing problems. And it's causing hygienic issues. So you want to send it away anyway. So then it's kedai to have in mind the kiyum of this mitzvah, just in case it is relevant. But min hastam, if you have no reason to do it, then better to leave the bird alone, shev al taisa adif, and to not assume there's an obligation. Again, there's a lot more written about this and more details, so we'll have a part two to this discussion. Tomorrow we'll also want to talk about the parsha, so we'll see exactly how to break things down. But just to quickly recap what we spoke about so far, so we saw that this mitzvah, there's a whole range of interpretations as to what it's for. Many assume that it is Rachmanis related, the Rambam and the Ramban, the Sefer Achinuch and others, and different versions of that, that it's about instilling Rachmanis within us. It's about not causing anguish to the mother seeing the child taken in its presence. The correlation is assumed between this and also the Aspino. We mentioned that elsewhere, Basu B'Cholov is also linked by Mefarshim Tosu the Aspino. There might be three mitzvahs that are all about this issue of if you're going to eat animals, fine, but don't involve two generations at once. And maybe they're all coming to that point. And we had the extra spin on it that the Lipskarov, the Zayim Latoro put in, that it's about not exploiting the maternal protection to hurt the mother. A whole other angle, but there were those who understood it differently. We mentioned how the Gra saw it as expressing an opposite kind of attribute, and therefore it comes together with Kivud Av Ein because it's the opposite, and together they all show that your motives are Avodas Hashem purely like Avraham Avinu by the Akedah. And additionally complicating things is the Mishnah that says, if you say Al Kantipa Ragiach Mecha Mishaskin or so, and we saw a range of interpretations how to relate to that. Either rejecting it like the Rambam does, say, but it's only according to an opinion that we don't do Tamei HaMitzvos, but we assume that we do Tamei HaMitzvos. That's one of the Rambam's approaches. He has a number of approaches. Or we could say that it's about Rachmanis, but it doesn't mean that it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's compulsory Rachmanis that's doing this. It's a mitzvah to us, either to instill Rachmanis or to express Rachmanis, but it's not Kadosh Baruch Hu's being forced to take this, and maybe specifically within the context of tefillah, for those reasons, that's where we have the issue. And then we talked about this fundamental question, which very much affects practice, of is there a mitzvah to do this? You should do this regardless of whether you're interested in the animals or not, or is it only if somebody is interested in taking the children, like shlita, you only have to do it if you are looking for the animal, and if not, there's no reason to shecht. And we saw this was a major machlokas achronim, and very practically relevant, and we mentioned a few approaches, that the Chavos Yair is probably the most prominent view, saying that it is an obligation, and he has a proof from a text and a proof from Tamei HaMitzvot, that from the text he says, Ki Yikare, so the Gemara says in Chulin, that you might think you have to go looking, Kamashimla, you don't have to go looking, but it sounds like if you stumble upon it, then it is an obligation, because otherwise, why would you possibly think you have to go looking? And we discussed the pros and cons of that approach. Or maybe it's based on the Zohar that says the whole mitzvah is to be a divine rachamim, and that should apply even if you are not coming for taking the children. And the Chacham Sofer was maybe the dominant view in the other way, that there is no such obligation if you're not interested. He doesn't accept either proof or either approach. And he says there is a aspect of achzarius if you're going to send away the mother for no reason, and that would be the opposite of the point of the mitzvah. And we discussed a little bit about Rav Asher Weiss's analysis of this, and he brought additional proof from the language of the Gemara in Kiddushin, and his conclusion that this is not something you should do if you're not interested in the eggs, and shave al taisa adif because of the concern of achzarius, and therefore he recommends against it unless you're sending the mother away anyway for some other reason. So then you should have kavanah to do it for the mitzvah as well. Again, more to say about this. So God willing, we will have a part two, and tomorrow we'll start with the parsha. Okay, so I wish everyone a safe and healthy day. Should be only good things. And stay sharp.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. Kol tov.